Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to Tennis Channel Inside In on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Mitch Michaels hosting this show from the Santa Monica studios, and what a start to the 2023 Australian Open. We have a pair of guests on today's show to break down the early round action, starting with Prakash Armitage, who has a lot to say about Andy Murray's theatrics. 2 5-set wins back-to-back, finishing after 4 in the morning. We talk Murray, Novak Djokovic still in it, still looking good, having the hamstring injury, Nadal's early round exit, the American men's takeover, if Iga is still in that perch position or is the field gaining on her on the women's side. A lot to talk about with Prakash Armitage. And then Pamela Maldonado returns to the show, the Yahoo Sports betting analyst, as well as a rabid tennis fan. She breaks down the wagering opportunities, Novak Djokovic at the top position, despite the fact that he's got the injury, all these Americans breaking through. Who does she prefer of that mix? As well as Medvedev, Tsitsipas, and all the other contenders on the men's side who can go for the crown. It's Prakash Armitage and Pamela Maldonado on Tennis Channel Inside In. Let's start the show. All right, now on Tennis Channel Inside In, happy to have him. Very busy man covering the Australian Open for Tennis Channel. Prakash Armitage, you might see him worldwide. He's in California now while we got him. Prakash, thanks for coming on the show. We are keeping our distance. I know I saw you on the Netflix documentary. I don't know there's a curse going around, but thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I mean, I don't even know where you want to start. I mean, there is so much going on right now. It's bananas.
Yeah, this has been, I feel like we say this every year, but this is at least the first two rounds because we're doing this after the second round. It's pretty much complete, and it's just remarkable stuff. You got to start with Andy Murray, right? I mean, I wasn't going to start with him until this morning when I woke up on the Pacific Coast, and he was still playing. Back-to-back 5-set wins. He wins the first one, up 2 sets, holds on. Matteo Berrettini, his best major win in years. This one, he's down 2 sets. He's playing the Aussie. It's after 3 in the morning. Crowd's kind of, you know, supporting their local guy. He has to use the bathroom. All this stuff is happening, and there's Andy Murray still fighting and giving it his all. It really is, you know, inspiring movies type stuff, what he's able to accomplish.
Well, how about that point at 2 sets to love, 2 love for Kakanakis, break point down. I mean, you're channeling the ghost of Jimmy Connors, right?
Yeah.
Against Paul Haarhuis in that point. It was remarkable. You know, Andy's always been a guy who, you know, I don't necessarily know that he's gotten the fairest rap with the crowds.
Yeah.
And over the years, he's gotten a lot of grief, you know, because he's been a temperamental guy.
Yeah.
But I've kind of loved the fact that he's been free enough to be himself, regardless of what, you know, people think. And now, of course, everyone loves him at this stage in his career. But I've always been a huge fan. He's always been a great inspiration for me as to, you know, you can always work harder at whatever you're doing.
Because
he was meticulous in everything that he went into. And even at the end of the match, in his interview after, you know, he had this shade of, I'm really proud of myself. You know, he said, you know, I got a big heart. But at the same time, he didn't go completely emotional. You know, he had that little element of, there's still another match. Let's go. Which I love.
Yeah.
Which I love to see.
Well, why I say inspirational is because he doesn't give any excuses for himself. And there's a lot of that, not just in sport, but, oh, we can always make excuses for ourselves. But this guy has the metal hip, which everyone talks about. He's got a Hall of Fame career. Saw Riley Opelka actually tweet out he thinks he's the 4th best player ever. That was what his take is. He's like, hey, loves Andy Murray. And, you know, he's in the era that he's in. But my point being, like, you could walk away if you're Murray. You have all these things going against you. And he's like, no, I want to compete. I want to get better. And, you know, he loves it. For as demonstrative as he can be sometimes, he just loves being in the fight. And that's why Andy Murray match is like an experience. And you just can't count the guy out. I know it's RBA next round and he's super fit and but Andy Murray, as long as he's playing, we're going to be interested. It's going to be just a remarkable experience.
We're certainly going to be interested. And I think we owe it to them. When I say them, I mean, you know, the greats who've been able to play the game, to play an end on their own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Look, let's not forget, when they all started, it was because they loved the game. It's not because someone said, hey, listen, you play this for 15, 20 years, you're going to win 20 Grand Slams, 5 Grand Slams, whatever it is. He truly loves it.
Yeah.
And whether he's losing in the third round, whether he's doing whatever, he loves that competition. He as he said in that opening round, I love playing in front of these stadiums and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, listen, give him all the love possible. And deep down, I know we're not supposed to have our favorites. He's one of mine. I'm hoping he goes deep.
You know? Yeah, and he's in a great section to do that. Speaking of loving the game and the process and what goes into being a tennis player, I wanted to transition to Rafa because he loses in the second round to Mackie McDonald. The injury flares up. It's a new injury. He's put the statement out. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks at minimum. Unfortunate, you know, to see anybody hampered by injury, let alone somebody in Nadal's case, defending champion, and we're on borrowed. We're on the how much more time are we going to see him watch, unfortunately. But he said the same thing that sticks out is that he just loves what he does. And I look at Nadal and I look at, you know, all the ailments that he's had. I think that match was really tough to see as a visual, as a viewer, to watch Nadal struggle out there. I will again give him props to Mackie McDonald, but you got to just rectify that these guys aren't going to last forever, and we have to appreciate seeing Rafa when we can get him.
Yeah, we certainly do. I talked about this on TC Live at the Australian Open. When you look at the greats, you look at the Muhammad Ali, Tiger Woods, Serena Williams, Rafa Nadal, all the different sports, mm-hmm. for that matter. When you get to that latter stage in your career when no one thinks you can do it, you always got that one little rabbit mm-hmm. in the hat that you can pull out. The big question is, did Rafa do that last mm-hmm. year? Have we mm-hmm. already seen it?
Yeah.
And the other aspect is, you know, habits as individuals, as humans, I'm not talking about just in sport, they're hard to break. And the longer you've been able to do them, the harder they are to break.
Yeah.
And there are good habits and bad habits. Champions have champion habits. He's believed in himself for so long. He's believed, I can do the impossible for so long. How do you throw that away?
Right.
You know? But now I think it becomes the balance act of family and what it takes to actually recover. Do you want to make that sacrifice at this stage in your career? Because you're going to have to give up so many other things.
With absolutely nothing to prove as well. He fought to the very end, which is the greatest part about that. And I do want to give props to Mackie. That was a huge win for him. And he had been battling the last couple of years to get right and to break through. Let's just talk about it right now. The Americans just kind of taking over
now.
The draw.
Come on now.
Eight into the third round. And it's important to note, this is without the mainstay in John Isner, without Taylor Fritz, who got bounced last night. Still eight Americans, and Brandon Holt, another one that had a chance there. Eight Americans in the round of 32. It's just insane. Like, this is just a testament to USTA and also kind of the guys that I say it a lot of times, the rising tide lifts all boats. The fact that there have been these American pace cars like Isner, like Fritz, Tiafoe, and now the next gen is really coming in the stars and stripes.
Your colleagues doing it is a funny thing. It's so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can be a little healthy competition, and sometimes it's not very healthy, where you see the relationships crumble a little bit. I think with this group of Americans, it's so healthy. You know, even when you saw the team from the United Cup with Jesse and Maddie and Francis and Taylor, you know, they were all putting up the lock sign, signing on the autograph lands afterward. They have a group chat going. I love that kind of energy. When you want someone else to win and they want you to win, it really helps you feel like you're playing for something more than just yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's been really healthy. And then you got the lesser talked about group. I mean, you got, you got Tommy Paul, you got Jensen Brooksby and so forth, all playing mm-hmm. so well. Then you got the youngest set. You got, Brandon Holt, you got Ben Shelton. It's an exciting time. And also just as a microcosm of what's happening on the men's tour, Rafa's older. He's not going to, mm-hmm. We'd be lucky to see him again, I think, at the Australian Open next year.
Yeah.
Novak, sure, still being Novak.
Right.
But it's wide open right now. Someone can get hot like they used to do in the 90s and all of a sudden come out with a Roberto Carretero winning in Hamburg, and stuff like that.
2 points I wanted to make to that, and I agree completely. One being, for as great as the big three are and what they've done and how you can just write them in, I think what's gotten overlooked is that middle tier, I should say the next greatest players there are, like the Ferrers, the Tsongas, Monfils, they were consistently getting into fourth rounds, quarterfinals, and semis. So with that not being there, it is opening up in that level on the men's tour. I love the depth of the men's game in America, and I love how everyone's different. Like, the styles aren't the same.
Styles.
You have a Brooksby, you have a Tommy Paul, you have Ben Shelton. Yeah.
Personalities are different.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at those three you mentioned, Ben, Tommy, Jensen, those are about as three different personalities that you can get.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, I mean, all across the world. We have all sorts of different personalities. I love the fact when people are themselves, then you have different fans gravitating towards different favorites. Beautiful thing for the game.
Jensen Brooksby beating Casper Ruud. The best win by far of his career. And what I loved about that match, Brooksby's 2022 wasn't on par with his 2021. Tactically, the kid's just rock solid. I feel like he got better with his serve. It's still, you know, not upper tier, but it's raised its level. And he is just a complete gamer and one of the better defenders that I've seen. He battled through elements. He battled the heat. He battled the top player. He battled the emotional letdown of losing a match point. Just not much bad you could say about where Jensen Brooksby's come.
Mentally, the kid's about as strong as it gets. You know, I think that's what he's able to make up for a few holes in his game. I mean, I saw a few first serves there get 176 kilometers an hour. I mean, on the men's tour, you know, you need to be getting it over 200 to be getting some free points. But regardless of that, the way he covers up weaknesses and amplifies his strengths, and it's exceptional. You know, up top between the ears, he's about as good as they come out there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see. We mentioned Ben Shelton coming along. Paul Tiafoe still in the mix. Wide open land of opportunity, not just the man. And for the non-Americans, too. The Popperin win over Fritz was huge. One of the better post-game in tears, basically, talking about what it's all about. There's opportunities galore. It goes back to Novak Djokovic, though, at the top. We know where he is standing-wise. And I think the only question is health. Is can that hamstring hold up for the long haul? Can he play his way into, you know, better health, which sounds crazy to see, but we have seen it before. Do you have any concern with where Djokovic is at right now?
Hard for me to say unless I know what his hamstring is feeling like. For me, it's Djokovic's title.
Yeah.
He's got the hamstring as his health as his number one enemy. Mm-hmm. And then he's got the rest of the field. You know, I think his section of the draw, I mean, you got to be looking at favoring him right now, right? I mean, Fritz was the big guy in his section. On numbers-wise, Fritz was the third favorite. Yeah. At this thing. So with him out, you know, Popperin in there, Ben Shelton in there, Djokovic has got to be feeling pretty good about moving into maybe the quarters, semis without, you know, too many nicks on his back.
Best of five favors this guy physically and mentally like nothing else.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Prakash Amritraj here on Tennis Channel Inside In. Just want to get your thoughts before I let you go on the women's side of things. We know Iga's in pole position. She's the pace car, still going strong. It seems pretty clear as day to me, at least, and I want your take on this. But Jessica Pegula seems like she is the next up in the mix right now. We'll see when the competition raises. But do you think maybe Coco Garcia still in the mix? Is there a slew of contenders, or do you think someone separated themselves?
I think you got to look at them in sections, and Iga's in section one and two, you know, by herself. And look, just for the record, I did pick Ons. For some reason, I thought Iga, something was going to happen in the course of seven matches. She has looked exceptional so far, but you never know with these Grand Slams. So even though she was maybe a 75-80% favorite, as I put it, at the beginning of the tournament, I just had kind of a gut feeling something was going to happen. I thought Ons was really going to pick it up after that first round, really didn't play well. But she just wasn't able to find her game.
Yeah.
Vondrousova is very tough. Sure, been to the final of a Grand Slam. But Ons just wasn't the Ons we saw in the last couple of Grand Slams, which was unfortunate. Having said that, the next category right under Iga, it's really Jessie and Sabalenka for me. I mean, they've both been playing fantastic tennis. Sabalenka seems to have calmed down those woes on the serve, won that title leading up to Australia. First couple rounds, she's looked very clean.
Right.
I love the way Coco's playing. I made it very clear. I think she's going to put up a slam very soon. Not sure which slam it's going to be, but she's in that section that Iga's in.
Mm.
And I would have loved it if she was in the opposite half.
Right.
Let Iga deal with a few more players before getting to her. She just doesn't have a great record against Iga.
It's a tough matchup.
But again, she's so young. She's improving leaps and bounds every few months. She had a tremendous offseason, too, incorporating a lot of drop shots and coming in, which I think is a huge key to beating Iga. So you definitely got to put Coco in the mix with Jessie and Arena.
We know styles make fights. We also know that in this tournament, and I did think that Coco-Emma match was great. In this tournament, there have been multiple women that have won and have saved a match point along the way. So just got to get through. Just got to keep it going. I wanted to just throw Garcia in there because she won the tour finals.
100%. And by the way, just for the record, out of all the players to watch, I got to throw BB when she's playing at her best, like she did in 2019, along with that tennis, which we haven't seen in some time. Garcia's got to be my favorite to watch because she brings that 90s style out. In Cincinnati, approximately 20% of returns was the amount she played behind the baseline. Everything else was inside the baseline. You got to love that. Yeah. And that's I love watching that kind of tennis. You know, so exciting, quick, fast points, shot making. So I'm a huge fan, but again, higher risk. Can you keep it up for the 14 days?
She went from like 70 to 4 in the world, but you watch her tennis, I agree. There's nothing fluky about it, how she plays out there.
No, and she's very committed. Yeah. When you play that game style, you have to execute.
Yeah.
You know, when you're having a bad, even when Rafa's had bad days, he can go into push mode.
Right,
you know,
right,
he can like, I'm going to run all day and I'm going to beat you when I'm not playing my best. I don't know that Garcia has that, so she just has to be more on a lot of the time.
I think Iga, and with Ons, with the issues, I think physically was kind of an issue there too. If Iga's kind of like holding the water in the dam, right? If she goes down, then I think it completely opens up. And I mentioned it with Sabalenka. I agree. If the serves keep up, she has the weapons to beat anybody. So
she said her tiger is calmer.
It's a tiger, not a wolf. I remember. I want to clarify that.
It's absolutely a tiger, but it's calmer this year.
So what should we expect going forward? We can end with this. What do you expect? I guess more American uprising? Because this could be a life-changing slam for a bunch of people.
I think it already is. Yeah. And look at this. Tommy is playing Jensen now. One of them's going to be in the fourth round. You know, and once you get to that fourth round stage, you're playing well enough to really be beating anyone. You know, if you take Novak out of the mix, honestly, anyone can lose to anyone.
Right.
Medvedev has looked really strong too. Let me also say that. But other than that, I think we're going to see some surprise quarterfinalists, you know, some surprise semifinalists. I'd love to see, you know, a name that hasn't even been in the mix perhaps come out and have a shot at this title, you know, in the final.
Francis kind of inherits Nadal's section. That could be huge for him. I also think that...
Tough match coming up.
Yes, very tough. Khachanov's a fighter. We know that. The Americans are great, and we could get another round of Tsitsipas-Medvedev for a spot in a final, and that could be... I mean, Tsitsi beat him. He started to kind of maybe... have a little bit of success as opposed to no success. So the storylines are plenty. Regardless of what happens, it's going to be nuts. And I know, you know, you're locked in too. We saw TC Live. You're also
locked
in. Come
on, man. I haven't found the key yet, but, you know, I think we got a little momentum here as well with our team. You know,
we do. We definitely do. Prakash Armitage, catch him on TC Live, all Australian Open. Thanks for coming on Tennis Channel Insight In. We'll have to do this again soon.
My pleasure. Let's do it again soon. This is a long Australian Open.
Absolutely. Huge thanks to Prakash Armitage, one of the busiest, hardest working members of not just tennis media, but of all media. And make sure you check out Tennis Channel Live's pregame show before all the Aussie action kicks off, which he is a main focus and main feature of. Now we're going to talk about sports betting with Pamela Maldonado. She's got her ears locked into tennis all times of year, but especially in Australia. She's going to break down the men's side and what we should look for going forward with Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray, Nadal being out. We kind of comment on what we think his future might look like and some thoughts on these Americans that are taking over the game, taking over down under. It's Pamela Maldonado here now on Tennis Channel Inside It. All right, everybody, welcome to Tennis Channel Inside In, Australian Open season. I'm delighted here, Mitch Michaels in the Santa Monica studios, to be talking tennis with my next guest, a regular on the show, especially this time of year. From Yahoo Sports, betting analyst, expert, and all-around tennis fiend like myself, Pamela Maldonado. Pam, thank you so much for joining the show. And I was a little worried when we set this time up, 10:30 on the West Coast, that there would still be live tennis in Australia, as crazy as that is. But thanks for coming back on Inside In.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It is the best time of year when we have, I love football, but it's starting to die down a little bit, which means there is so much room for tennis, which happens every week from here on out. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, I think your combination of tennis and football, you basically have it to where you don't have to worry about the letdown when football ends. You just dive right into tennis and right into Aussie, which you've long said has been your favorite tournament. And it's, I think, been strengthened in the last couple of years. Especially this one, which we'll get to in a second. But you just love the madness, the chaos. And I think seeing people start of the year when we don't know what to really expect outside of the very select few brings the excitement to the sport.
Absolutely. I'll agree with that. I wouldn't say that it brings chaos. It brings more intrigue, if anything, because there's not really, I think that's what people kind of forget about tennis, is there's no off season. You have football. Once it ends, you don't see it for another like 6 months. NBA, every other sport on the planet has a legitimate off season, even the PGA. You don't get that from tennis. There's like a 1 month turnaround, and it's really up to the individual player if they actually want to utilize that time, or somebody like Casper Ruud, who utilized his offseason to play exhibition matches. So he hasn't had time off. And now he's talking about maybe doing February as his off time. So it's just one of those things where, for the most part, a lot of the players come into this fresh because we haven't really seen them since Paris, whatever the tournament was that they last played. So it should be more true to form. This tournament has been kind of wonky. We're starting to see like a shift in changes here. And I think it's because of the conditions. We had rain delays. We had heat delays. We had the balls are different, as Novak Djokovic has pointed out. So it's just, there's a lot more variables this time around that I feel like we haven't maybe seen in the past, which has made this specific tournament, 2023 version of Australian Open, a little bit more on the wild side.
I want to, and I agree with most of that, I want to just also add that we were spoiled by so long, and I know Djokovic is still out there as a prohibitive favorite, which we will get to, but we were spoiled for so long about the top guys advancing deep into these tournaments. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, they were just locks, and you could even go a little further down the depths, the guys like the David Ferrers, the Joe Wilfred Tsongas, Monfils, that you could count to win a couple matches every time. I think we kind of took that for granted, and we're seeing now that it's not all, just because you have a seed, a number next to your name, there is no lock. And well, some of these sections have just been completely blown up. Maybe not chaos, but just showing the depth of the game. And as you said, how important good preparation and good health is going into a five-set slam in the most brutal conditions.
Well, you're exactly right in that for the last few years, we have been spoiled. And I will say that until... yeah. We no longer have that as an option once Djokovic retires, once Nadal retires. But what we're seeing right now is what happened in 2022 with Carlos Alcaraz just absolutely went off. Mm-hmm. But it took Alcaraz to show other players how to be a better tennis player by adding more variety into their game, bringing in more weapons, and translating that onto the court. We're starting to see that. Well, people are now coming into the net more. Medvedev is coming into the net. This is not something that he does, but we're seeing that across the board because their players have noticed, okay, if I want to get better, if I want to be somebody at the top, Djokovic is still hanging around. Yeah. I need to improve my game. So what we're seeing from Djokovic is still him, but then the rest of the field is starting to climb up to his level. And now the rest of the field is an even playing field. So it's just been a lot more competitiveness instead of so top heavy.
Alcaraz also showing, I would argue, the price you kind of have to pay. And he didn't get away scot-free, too, with the injury. Unfortunately, we're not seeing him here. He's understandably taking the long approach to his game, but it is tough to have anything close to the year he had, but also to stack them up and be fresh each time. So it's, you know, we want to see him back here. Unfortunately, he's not playing. No Kyrgios in this tournament. Some names missing, but the drama has just been amazing. I was going to start up until this morning with Djokovic, but I got to talk about Andy Murray first, because what he's done in the last, the win against Berrettini, his biggest win in a major in a long time, up from two sets. Then he follows that up down two sets, and he comes back up till four in the morning against Thanasi Kanakis. And, you know, the competitive spirit and everything that he has that we've known about him for so long, but the fact that he's able to still be so fit, and I'm talking to someone whose life is fitness, but that's the part that gets kind of swept under the rug, is that regardless of the ailments, the conditions, this guy shows up at every major in tip-top shape, and there's a reason why he's able to go the distance, even with his ailments. And I think that, you know, I don't want that to go under the rug, the fact that Murray takes such good care of his body and knows what it's like to answer the bell, regardless of the circumstances.
Well, let's talk about that, because he is 35 years old. He's one of the older players on tour who is still crushing. He's still trying to find his way back from his injury, which he has a like metal inside his hip. Mm-hmm. And he is still being able to be competitive, like back-to-back five-set matches. This was the second longest match in Australian Open history. It was 5 hours and 45 minutes for a 35-year-old with metal in his hip. Like, let's take a moment to appreciate that, because That is super hard to do in any sport, much less in an even more so in an individual sport as tennis, where it's just you and one other person. And you have to not only hype yourself up, you have to be your own hype man. You have to be your own trainer, because you can't really call for a personal trainer like, oh, I'm feeling a little tired, come feed me. Yeah. You have to handle so many variables on your own. At 3 a.m., there was no bathroom break that Murray was complaining about. So you're for 5 hours and 45 minutes, it is just you and your opponent, and you have to do everything in your brain to combat all of the elements, including the crowd. So yeah, super kudos to Andy Murray. It was a fantastic match. I can't wait to watch him, to continue watching.
Well, you know, there's a reason why. If you look back at his history, I don't know if it's a publicly known story, but he used to train when he was living in Miami with the Miami Hurricanes athletic training center with the football players and all the athletes playing. He did some damage in the weight room. Like, for his weight class, I think he still does have his name on the board for some of the weightlifting that he's done. And the fact that the section of his draw, and this is where we can kind of transition to the betting, it's been completely blown up. A lot of seeds out there. Mm-hmm. The only one left is Roberto Bautista Agut, who's now the favorite in that section, improbably enough. That's who Murray gets next. But this is a real opportunity for him, and this is a real opportunity for people that like certain players, know what they're doing, see the trends, Pam, to really attack this section and see some value, which we haven't really had in a lot of these Grand Slams in men's tennis.
I'm not really one to I like underdogs, especially when it comes to like football. I like looking at underdogs. Andy Murray will be the underdog in this position, rightfully so, and I'm not sure that I can back him. There's two parts of me when it comes to tennis. The sports better that's looking for value, and then the fan. I want to be a fan of Andy Murray, and I hope that he gets through Roberto Bautista Agut. But there's a big question mark looming and going forward, and it's whether Andy Murray, who has now played back-to-back five-set matches, is going to have the stamina after 10 sets. I mean, we're talking about the second longest match in Australian Open history versus Kokkinakis, 5 hours, 45 minutes. And that's because Murray was also down in the third set 2-5, and he made this miraculous comeback.
Yeah.
So the longest match prior was 5 hours, 53 minutes with Nadal and Djokovic. They're even them, as young as they were, it still took a toll on their body in the next match after. This is Andy Murray, who's 35 years old. Does he have the legs for it is my question mark.
The guy he's playing, Roberto Bautista Agut, came back from 5-down, kind of ran away with it, is very fit. So that's part of the issue, too, is he's not playing somebody who's, you know, afraid of these moments.
RBA's style of play, he is a backboard. So you know that the ball is coming back. So is Andy Murray is he mentally ready? And more importantly, is he physically ready for a potential another five-setter? Because that's what you're going to get with RBA. Somebody who just will always return the ball, expect long rallies. I'm really interested, and I hope he gets it done, but it could just be in just another potential fanship, viewership.
Well, regardless of what happens, he's done tremendous, winning back-to-back five-set matches, Berrettini and Kakanakis back-to-back. I think the key to this, the key to the betting strategy, if I have this right, is just don't bet on anyone that's been on Netflix.
So far, it seems to be the case.
There's only two left, and we're in the third round. You know, that's crazy. But
what's so funny about that is I was talking to somebody about this, and I had just finished the first two episodes, and I was like, and I saw the tweets about the Netflix, the curse, the documentary curse, and I was like, we'll see if it is real, if Kokkinakis goes down. And I mean,
Well, there's two people left, and they each had struggles. Maria Sakkari and Felix Auger-Aliassime are the last ones left of the first five shows. So remarkable there. Crazy stuff.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 nine-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Pamela Maldonado here on Tennis Channel Inside, and let's talk about Novak Djokovic, who won in four sets last night. And I wouldn't say routine, just in the sense that the fitness is never going to be doubted, but the injury, whenever he's open about it, will be, you know, scrutinized. Yes. And he says he has issue. You could see the mobility. He wasn't hitting a lot of open stance backhands. Now, the beauty of his game is that he has different ways to beat you, and can beat most of the players on tour in multiple ways. But I'll ask you, as someone that's followed his career with admiration and with wagering interest as well, what kind of level of concern do you have? Not next match, maybe not even the match after that, but going the distance with how he's looked and how he's admittedly addressed his injury concerns.
I had the concern for Novak Djokovic injury headed into the tournament. Normally, if I am high on Djokovic in years past, I have put anywhere between 5 to 10x units on him to win that tournament. This tournament, I did just 2 because it is a concern of this is a major. It's 2 weeks of tennis. You saw how his injury did come into play against Medvedev. Medvedev even made fun of him. and his draw, although it is fairly friendly, there is one player that gives me pause, and it's a potential quarterfinal match against Holger Rune. So who is much younger, much faster, and was the one player who took Djokovic out of his winning streak to defeat him in Paris. So because of that, it gave me pause. I needed to see, okay, let me see how he looks in the first couple of matches. Him dropping a set in his second round match doesn't give me a concern because that's kind of his MO. We've seen it where he kind of starts out a little bit slow. It was a tie break, so it's not like it was anything of a shocker. And then he went on to win the next 2 sets, 6-2, 6-0. So I'm not worried about the physicality of Djokovic. And if there was any single player on tour who knows how to take care of his body as well, as sharp, is knowledgeable, knows exactly the regimen that he needs in order to push through, it's Djokovic. That's what he's known for. I mean, this is why you see him all angles of the court, because he devotes hours and hours and hours into maintaining a specified fitness in order to get through these best of five matches.
Do you find him, I mean, he's a unicorn in a lot of ways, but I find it very, I'd say equal parts fascinating and inspiring that this guy, unlike most athletes, I worry more about the injury in like the very next match. I find that if he can just survive and play a plan B, plan C that doesn't put the tension on there, he'll play himself into better shape as these tournaments go along. 2 Australian Opens ago, his last title, he had that, you know, I would say legendary. He had that issue in the match versus Fritz where he was breaking down. He talked about his body. By the end of that tournament, he looked fit as a fiddle. So I do think that, you know, the draw being a little favorable early is going to be a gift to him. Not that he needs any more gifts, but the fact that he can kind of play his way maybe back into form, because I agree, Holger Rune is the test, like quarterfinal match. That's the test. It is best of 5, though, and I know that match versus Paris was great. Pretty much everybody, the way that match was going, the way Holger's body was going, if it goes 1 or 2 more sets, it probably wouldn't go his way. So if Djokovic can get to the quarterfinal in 80 to 90% range, I think he'll be okay, but yeah, that's going to be the thing. It's going to be Djokovic, as he said, trusting God and trusting his physio.
It does appear that the sportsbook, maybe they have some information that the rest of us don't, because pre-tournament, Djokovic was minus 125 to win, and now he is plus 125.
I saw that.
I'm not at all concerned that his next matchup against Grigor Dimitrov, I'm not worried about that one. Djokovic holds a 9-1 record. The last win for Dimi was in Madrid on clay back in 2013. So for me, yes, the concern has always been getting through Holger Rune, but he's playing well right now also. But the problem is that, like you mentioned, this is a best of 5.
Right.
So I need to see if the type of aggression that Rune had in that best of 3, it is very difficult to maintain in a best of 5. This is why we see somebody like Andy Murray down 2 sets to love able to come back, because it becomes so much more of a mental game. And we haven't seen that from somebody who's 19 years old have to be tested in such a fashion against the number one player. Like, there's a reason why they're the big 3, Nadal and Djokovic, because if they're down 2 sets to love, you can guarantee that this is still going to be a 5-set, maybe even a 5-set tiebreak. Where's your mentality in that? Are you going to hold your aggression? The type of shots that you're making in the first 2 sets early on, is that going to be able to continue in a best of 5? So there's a lot of question marks. I'm really anxious to get forward to that match.
Even Nadal, when he's, you know, on his last legs, literally and figuratively, is still fighting to the very end. So there's the mentality for you. One other note, and I agree. I mean, Holger Rune just becoming, you know, doing the Alcaraz model, getting fit, getting stronger. Mm-hmm. Lot to like. Very special talent. Former junior number one. I think Djokovic, the fourth round, if he gets Dimitrov, who's playing better and is the type of player that can, you know, make you run a little bit, that could be a test. I want to see what his level would be like in that match going into it. But yeah, maybe maybe there is some value if you want to take over some of these spreads, some of these sets. I mean, you can probably get value for players to take a set off Djokovic. And like we saw last night, maybe there's value for him in just, you know, resetting, not really trying to fight all the way. And it's not tanking, but it's conserving energy more than anything.
Conserving energy, yes. And this is how I describe, this is a really good indication of how you can perceive tennis coming into every single match. Somebody like Nadal, somebody like Djokovic, they almost always start at a level one or two. They want to see how little can I do and still get through. Okay, this guy is playing a little bit better than I expected. Let me up it up a notch. Yeah. And then, okay, this is really close. Let me just like take it straight to level five. There's not a lot of players on tour. Let's be real. There's two players on tour, Nadal and Djokovic, who have these levels that they can up that the rest of the field cannot.
Yeah.
So and they always start lower to preserve, up it when they need to.
It's why we always say when people play these guys, you have to win the first set or you have zero chance. Like you have to get up to an early start. I think Stan's the only guy to ever really beat Djokovic, and it happened twice while losing the first set in these best of five. So remarkable there. We'll see. I mean, this is going to be fascinating to watch. Other areas, too. I mean, I'm looking at it because Nadal obviously out, and, you know, we have to have a final. We have to have people to make a run. Daniil Medvedev is playing better. He seems to have gotten some confidence back. You mentioned earlier he's coming to the net a little bit more, and I think he does love playing down in Australia as bad as last year's final went for him. I saw minus 165 to kind of get through his section, and you know, looking at the odds on favorite to get to the final in that section of the draw, do you see it that way? Do you see maybe more value in backing the underdogs? Where are you at with Medvedev's level heading into the stretch run here?
For Medvedev to win the Australian Open, still not interested because you still have to get there Novak Djokovic. And even with an injury, like I said, he's going to figure it out.
Okay.
I am interested to see how Medvedev is going to handle his next match against Sebastian Korda. I do still strongly believe that Medvedev is going to win and likely in four even, but I'm interested because Korda has the style of play where he can employ his net game, and there's nothing that Medvedev hates more than having to run into the net.
I like it.
He likes to stay behind the baseline.
You're coming around on Korda a little bit. I like that. That's good.
Well, in this matchup, it is very matchup specific. Yeah. So Korda needs to bring that same tactic in order to throw Medvedev off. Uh-huh. If he can, if he comes into the net and drop shots and slices and brings Medvedev forward, yes, he has a shot here. But if Korda gets comfortable behind the baseline and he plays a Medvedev game, Medvedev is just going to eat him up. Yeah. So it's just very important to see what Korda is doing more so than it is Medvedev. Mm-hmm. And if Medvedev gets through, he's playing some good tennis right now. Mm-hmm. Still like Djokovic.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to debate you on that. I'm just looking at it from the somebody has to make this final. And I think even given the ghosts in his past, I might trust him the most. But that's what's beautiful about where we are right now is the depth of this game is that Medvedev could lose next match. He could make it all the way to the final.
Well, the player that I like, if we're talking about who's going to make the final to face Djokovic, potentially, I've been high on Stefanos Tsitsipas, and it kind of pains me to say that because he has been such a hothead of a player over the last couple of seasons where you see him and you know that he is right there. He has the skill set. He has, for at least 3-4 sets, has the mindset to win a major, and then he just breaks down and then he just can't push through. Here, I do think that he has the potential to not only make the final, but even come out with a win.
Wow.
So there's two features that I took and it was Djokovic to win. And then I took Tsitsipas at 14-1. And yes, Djokovic is 10-2 over Stefanos, but Stefanos is so close. He had five sets at 2020 Roland Garros, five sets at the 2021 Roland Garros. Those are slower conditions, but I think the conditions right now in Australian Open kind of favor Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
Novak Djokovic talked about how the ball themselves don't have as high of a bounce. It's going to favor a lot of the flat hitters, and it favors some of the clay courters who can handle long rallies. That's exactly Tsitsipas's game. So I think the slow court, you can say that was clay, this is Australian Open, this is hard, but the conditions are kind of a lot more similar than probably what you would think. Tsitsipas is he's almost there. Tsitsipas is so almost there, and I love how he came out of the gate with the straight set victory. We saw him last year in previous majors where he had a five set against no-name players. He's coming into this with some confidence. He's coming into this with some strength. He's getting close.
Yeah, the part about the balls is very accurate. Djokovic has said it's harder to put balls away. People start hitting harder. They might overhit. Tsitsipas never really been susceptible to that. I'm on record. I mean, he's a Greek guy like myself. He loves his. He has a great game. He is very, very versatile, which I think a lot of the younger players lack at times. It's between the ears, and he seems to be doing and saying all the right things. And the draw is pretty favorable to him. He could get Sinner. Exactly. He could get Sinner, who he's done very well against. Medvedev would be the match, and up until last year, Medvedev had kind of owned him. Maybe Tsitsipas has turned it around. That would be a fun one. He's done very well in Australia. It has been far and away his hard court, you know, haven where he enjoys playing, and that might speak to the work he puts in the offseason, as we said. So that's a sneaky one I like, because it's, we were talking about this. He's the number three seed, and everyone's like, wow, it'd be crazy. I mean, he's playing for number one in the world, too. I mean, I know Djokovic is a primitive favorite, but Tsitsipas could leave Australia as a Grand Slam champion and number one.
And I do think that Tsitsipas has the variety in his game that can defeat Medvedev in this position. Like I said, I need to see more from Medvedev. I believe his game has just been figured out over the last couple of seasons. This is why he had such a rocky 2022. And unless he adapts, you die. I mean, it's adapt. And so Tsitsipas is the type of player where maybe the strength, the weakness of his has been the backhand. He's missing that down the line shot, but it's still aggressive enough to where he can be competitive in these best of five tournaments. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing him. I want to see him thrive. And I think the conditions fit him.
Before we go to some speed round, just likes or dislikes to wrap this up. I know we got to talk about Rafa. It's unfortunate with what's going on with the injury, how his tournament ended. I know the sad there, the defending champion out in the second round to Mackie McDonald announced he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, from the you know, future, looking at it, him as a player to wager on, I mean, we're not going to see him at least until maybe the hard court swing, but it's not looking like it's Indian Wells or Miami. It's probably going to be the clay court season. So on one hand, it's good that he is going to rest, get the off season, re-up for where he dominates. But 36 years old is a little different than coming back from an injury at 22, 25, 28 even. So where are you at with Rafa and the unfortunate father time debate that we have to have of, we don't know how much longer it's going to be. And with the injuries mounting up, there's some real concern now that it might not be much longer.
I am at the point where it's hard to not cry, not to want to cry.
Okay.
I ended up buying tickets to see the Carlos Alcaraz versus Nadal exhibition match in early March. Well, now that he's out 6 to 8 weeks, the eighth week is that week that he's supposed to play that exhibition match. And so I don't even know if that's going to still happen, but I bought those tickets because I'm just very much in the belief that 2023 is the season that we see him retire, because a lot happened in 2022. Not only was his injuries a thing and he had the injections in his foot in order to win Roland Garros, he saw his best friend Roger Federer retire. He had a baby. Like, there's just like a lot of off the court situations that, in addition to the injuries, that now he has a new injury.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just father time. It's now life is happening around him. And is he in a position to want to continue? So I bought these tickets for the exhibition match, assuming that this might be the last opportunity that I have to see him, because and then we saw it with the injury that he had in the second round here at Australian Open. When the injury occurred, they panned over to his wife. I have never seen his wife cry. And to me, that was very indicative that maybe the retirement talks have already happened.
Yeah.
And this is not how him and his family want the career to end. You want to go out on a high note, not because your body's forcing you to.
Right. It's a balance of going out when you, because he said he still loves the game. He still loves working hard. He loves the process, not just being a tennis player and all the accolades, but he loves the process of working on something and seeing the reward. So on one hand, I get why on the outside you'd say, why don't you just go out on top, win a major, and then call it quits? Well, he still feels good. He still loves the day-to-day. But the flip side of that is if your body just says, no, this is it. Like, you physically can't do this anymore. You have to think about other stuff. I want to see him play as long as, you know, he's able and as long as he's, you know.
But as long as he's doing it healthy, too.
Yeah.
That when he got the injections. When he got into the injections for Roland Garros just to get through that tournament, that is not sustainable. That is something that is a one and done. Now, how are you going to handle the next 2-3 years? Can you handle the next 2-3 years? Because the type of play that Nadal has is not conducive to longevity in the sport. So what he's already doing now at his age is already so impressive. He likes the long rallies. Yeah. He likes the 5-hour matches. You will see him down 2 sets and come back in 5. Mm-hmm. It is just, he likes long points.
Yeah.
And it has clearly put wear and tear in his body. He has more miles on court than anybody else on tour. So it's just very difficult for me to see him, one, ever get 100% back to full health. There's just not enough time left in order to do that. Mm-hmm. I would say I am not a doctor, but like maybe 6 months to a year get of no playing to really give your body a chance at 100% recovery. Yeah. And if he's not doing that, you're always just going to be susceptible to re-injuring something.
Well, what I do know is if he's not dominant on clay, that is going to open up for the first time since pre-Nadal. So I think we're going to have to adjust to who is actually going to be who's going to start winning on this surface that we just penciled, not even penciled, permanent marker pen. Could be Carlos, another guy coming off of his injury that I want. It's just such a fascinating time for tennis, the good and the bad.
It is.
We've got all these players, you know, jockeying for position still. Pamela Maldonado here on Tennis Channel Insight, and this has been a blast. Before I let you go, just some other quick thoughts on the draw. And, you know, I just want to know what other players you like and maybe dislike. There's a lot of Americans left. Haven't heard you mention any of them. If you kind of have a few that you might think could be, you know, a couple are playing each other, so we have to kind of decipher through that. But who are some players that you've taken an interest in as they're still around in the men's draw?
Big Bo.
Oh, yeah.
How are we not talking about Tiafoe here? I'm really interested in his match against Khachanov. From a betting perspective, it's a pick. So they're saying it's a 50-50 as to who's going to win. I like Tiafoe in this spot because of his return game. He has a solid return game, and Khachanov is a lot of just a big serve. And we've seen Tiafoe, he has variety in his game. That's why he was able to be so competitive against Rafa Nadal last season, because he has the slice, he has the drop shot. And playing against somebody like Khachanov, who pretty much just has like one weapon to his name, he can be very competitive. And so I'm really interested in seeing how deep he can run. Tiafoe had a lot of success in 2022 that I'd like to see him continue on into this season. And so far he has a trajectory to do so. Yeah. So I'm interested in Tiafoe. As mentioned, I don't think Korda is going to get past Medvedev. But I mean, yeah, it's a very interesting time for US men's tennis.
Yeah.
I'm not at all entirely surprised that Fritz dropped out early, just because he doesn't have a successful record here at Australian Open. He was 9-6 entering this tournament. But now with him gone, I just think that he has better opportunities later on into the year, Taylor Fritz. So I would like to see him back at Indian Wells. Let's see how he does there. He has a good chance here at the US Open.
Yeah.
But for this specific tournament, I'm really interested to see how far Tiafoe can go.
The Tiafoe-Khachanov match, fascinating on all fronts. Big Fo has the weapons. He can beat him. I think his fitness has gotten better. His ability to stay locked in has gotten better too. Khachanov is a fighter. That's the one thing I do respect about him the most, is that he doesn't go away. He can beat players better than him with that mindset, which I love. So that's a fun match. Can't wait for that one. Brooks beat Paul. Exciting contrast of styles there. And you got to throw in Ben Shelton still, you know, coming in. Yeah. First time out of the country, wins in straight sets, and wins basically a road game. And I think that's where his college tennis helped him. He had some Chilean fans that were cheering for their guy, and, you know, obviously he didn't like that. So instead of just, you know, tanking it away, he locked in. And there's a lot to like. I don't know what'll happen, but I do think with American men's tennis, the rising tide lifts all boats. And they saw the years that Fritz and Tiafoe had last year. And these guys are saying, well, we got to raise our level. Kind of like you said, the Alcaraz effect. We have to play better.
You have to play better, but it's also the conditions that we talked about earlier. Yeah. They're kind of suitable for U.S. men's tennis, because it's a lot of the flat ball hitters. The ball's not bouncing as high, so it's favoring those who hit the ball flat. So that's why you saw Mackenzie McDonald do well against Nadal. That's why you see Brooksby beat Casper Ruud, because Ruud has too much of a top spin, and that doesn't – players like Djokovic, that's why he does so well, because he's fine hitting the ball flat. So there's still a couple of players here. Cam Norrie even, it favors his backhand. So the conditions are very favorable to that of American tennis, American style type of tennis. So you're seeing them do well. Ben Shelton, I made a mistake of fading him in round 2 with a Nicolai Jarry, but it was just because, you know,
no, I get
he's
it.
Young. first time position. Yeah. Let's see what you really got. Well, turns out he has a little bit more than I expected. So yeah. I'll probably be laying away from him, but let's go Tiapo. Cause I really think that he also has a really good opportunity. If not only he gets to catch enough, but I really think that he can also defeat Medvedev.
Mm, that's the roughest section. So it opened up for him as well. Pamela Maldonado, this was a blast. Always fun talking tennis with you. Last thing is, I just want an update. How's the fitness life going? And have you actually been approached by any of these tennis players to kind of give them the leg up?
I wish. If anybody needs a personal trainer, I am here. Right now, I'm in my off season, so I'm doing nothing but eating a lot of food and lifting really heavy. So I did a personal best a couple weeks ago. I did a 300-pound deadlift. Mm. I am now part of the 300 club, so that's fun. I did a couple reps of a 55-pound pull-up. So I'm definitely getting stronger. And in turn, that's physicality. But like mentally, it really helps you with the betting side too, because now it's like, all right, you have belief, you have confidence, and that's what you need in order to be successful when it comes to sports betting.
It's all impressive stuff. I'm just a little wary of the cold tub stuff. That's where I draw the line. It's just it's too much suffering for one person. But no, it's really impressive. All the stuff that you do. Check Pamela Maldonado out on Yahoo as a betting analyst. Check out her Aussie Open insights as well, all tournament. Thanks again, Pam, for joining the show. Appreciate having you on Tennis Channel Insight In.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Tennis Channel Insight In. Thank you to all who listen. Thank you to Prakash Armitage and Pamela Maldonado for appearing as guests. And you can always go to tennis.com/podcast to find this episode, as well as the entire catalog of shows on our outstanding network. We're on all your podcast platforms. And make sure you subscribe, leave a review, and a rating to keep us going. We'll be back to talk more Australian Open on Tennis Channel Insight In very soon, because you never know what happens at the year's first major. For Prakash Armitage and Pamela Maldonado, my name is Mitch Michaels, and thank you again for listening to Tennis Channel Insight In.